I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. Burrow.com/ACAST.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside. Just outside of New York City from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Absolutely gorgeous day. We're going to do a bit of weather chat here. I'm looking straight out the window. The sun, I won't say spring has sprung because that is way too premature for the first week of February, but lovely sun, bright sky, gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. It's lifting my mood slightly after what was, yesterday was rough. It was very rough. Yeah, how are you?
I'm well.
You're slightly, you took me by shock when I joined the podcast call. You're wearing...
How so?
Your baseball hat back to front. I've never seen this look for you. I've done it several times.
Many times. Sometimes I have certain hats that I feel like don't fit me properly when I wear them the normal way.
And right.
So I turn them around.
Okay. I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't look good.
Not a whole lot else to it.
Kind of mid-90s skater dude.
And I'm wearing, JJ, my Kirui Kangaroos sweatshirt.
Ah, fantastic. Those guys were the best. I wonder, do they still listen or did they abandon us after we jumped from the mothership?
That's a good question. We'll never know. Well, actually, we can know. Reach out to us. Tell us. It's very easy for us to know. What a show. Oh, my God. This weekend was jam-packed. There was so much that happened. So we're going to talk about the Premier League. I mean, just the sheer number of goals scored this weekend in the Premier League was astounding. So we'll go through some of the highlights and lowlights of what went on in England over the course of the last few days. We'll talk a little bit about what went on in Hong Kong. We haven't touched much on the Inter Miami tour of Asia, and it has ended prematurely. So this is kind of our last chance. So we'll talk about that later on in the pod. A little bit of Mbappe news as well. But JJ, we'll start. I wasn't sure where to start. Liverpool Arsenal was obviously the biggest game, one of the biggest games of the season, but boy, the way American soccer Twitter exploded. I mean, like all parts of it, people who I follow who are NFL Twitter or like NBA, like American soccer Twitter just is up for this World Cup is what I came away from feeling.
How could they not be?
Who I guess I wouldn't have expected it, but cause we're 2 years out and it's on people's radar in a way that I think was a little bit eye opening to me and kind of cool.
You'll have to help me out. Now, I know the basic parts, but I was in Manhattan yesterday to watch the Liverpool game because I had a meeting straight after Gaelic football meeting straight after the Arsenal Liverpool game. So I was still out when this draw was taking place. So I'm piecing together what seemed to be some kind of a cringe fest.
We consume a lot. Here we watch a lot of games, we read a lot of stuff, we watch highlight packages, we consume a lot. JJ, I didn't have it on a Sunday, I didn't have it in me I didn't watch the live reveal. I knew that everything I needed to know would be unveiled in real time on Twitter. So I did not sit through, as you put it, the cringe fest. I will for draws, like to see who the U.S. will be in a group with, things like that. There's a little more excitement to that. But just knowing the cities and the dates, I don't know. I just didn't muster it up.
No, and it was Gianni Infantino sat in like some kind of hoodie on a sofa with Kevin Hart and Jenny Taff. And it was just all very odd.
And we already knew the sites. I guess we just didn't know who would have the honor of hosting which high profile matches and when these things would occur, how many each city would get.
The sharp focus thing for me, that the thing that's really been highlighted to me, because I suppose now that it's within 2 years, you're kind of almost 2 years, you're kind of beginning to really think about things like who in the Canadian FA and who in the Mexican FA agreed to this? This is such BS for them.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, it's quite wrong. Why the payoff they must be getting in other ways from US soccer and from FIFA to have this is a US World Cup.
I would love
nothing past the quarterfinal stage.
Yeah, I would love to go back.
Crazy.
I'd love to go back to whatever the initial meetings were between these countries. If the U.S. might have felt we can do this on our own, and our bid is strong enough where we can do it on our own. It becomes strengthened a little if we add you guys in, but we can go it alone. So maybe knowing that Mexico and Canada just kind of felt it's this or nothing.
It was 2017, right, when this plan was launched or the bid was kind of finalized. And I guess if you look at America, if you look larger, you know, a big focus look at America as a country as opposed to just America as a soccer hosting venue, I guess they thought that with the government that was in power at the time, the president that was in power, that we need to make this more palatable. So we're not going to have it as just the US World Cup. We're going to include Canada and we're going to include Mexico as like buffers in some way. So like if make it more palatable, it's the only way I can think of it because they're getting nothing out of this. This is like,
well,
they'll be forgotten. The quarterfinal stage, nothing beyond the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
How is there not a semifinal in Canada and a semifinal or a I would imagine the semifinal in Mexico. For God's sake, like Mexico could be the host. The Azteca could be the host for the final, and no one in the international world would say that's unusual. They'd be like, that's a perfect place to have a final.
Well, yes and no. I mean, Mexico have hosted two of these already, so maybe they felt like. I mean, this is the U.S.'s second one. I don't know.
They've.
Again, that wasn't going to that was never going to happen because, like you said, this is a U.S. World Cup.
Yeah, definitely.
And so, like Mexico and Canada were, I'm sure there was some kind of agreement in the beginning of this that, like I said, the U.S. could have done this by themselves, but for whatever reason, they chose to go all in with the whole region.
Yeah.
Just to go through the stats of it, 78 of the 104 games at this World Cup will take place in the United States, and every match from the quarterfinal stage onward. So again, it's an American World Cup.
By the way, what is it like 68 group games or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. 48 team World Cup. Here we go.
Absolutely mental.
But I do feel jaded. So Tarek Panja tweeted. He said there will be more games in Texas than either Mexico or Canada.
Yeah.
And in some ways, I almost wondered, is that the compromise? Like there's such, we know when Mexico have played games at Jerry World, it's such a Mexican home game. There's such a huge Mexican population in that part of the country. So the fact that there's nine games being played there, you do
Texas,
wonder.
Yeah, home you do of wonder. Soccer.
So, yes, yeah, so I don't know. Now, I can't go entirely as far as to say Mexico and Canada are getting nothing out of this. And the only reason I stop myself from that is because when you're going into a World Cup as one of the host nations, I mean, really, other than the fact that like having the final in your country is a big deal, but like the thing you care about most is your team.
Uh-huh.
Canada and Mexico are going to play all of their group stage matches on home soil. So I can't sit here and tell you that that's a tournament that features Mexico playing group stage games in Mexico and Canada, even more so, playing in a World Cup. We know that, and playing home games in their home country. I can't sit here and say they got nothing out of this. That's for the people in those countries. Having home World Cup games is a big deal.
I mean, we've just stated how, and we regularly state, if I said tomorrow, all I did was put it out on Twitter, hey, the Mexican national team are playing in my backyard, there'd be 60,000 people there at the drop of a hat. So I'm not so sure about...
You don't think it's different playing Mexico playing a game at home in a World Cup than saying, okay, we're going to play in the Netherlands or whatever?
It's great for the local population there, but Mexico has such a huge diaspora that it really I don't think it matters too much. I'm not going to go as far as to say I'm as used to watching the Mexican national team play in Arizona and play in Dallas and play on the West Coast and play on the East Coast as I am probably way more than I am seeing them play in Guadalajara or wherever. Like, so
maybe, but I think there's something cool about Mexico playing home games at the Azteca or in Monterrey or wherever. I mean, I think it's cool. And the same is for Canada, as they'll be in Toronto and then Vancouver for their second two games.
Right.
And so we'll see. I mean, you know, we say Mexico have no matches from the quarterfinal stage onward. We don't know that the Mexican team will be still playing at that stage in the tournament. So who really knows how this will play out? So, yes, it's an American World Cup, but I won't go quite as far as to say that Mexico and Canada are getting nothing out of this. The big winner here, I mean, we can go through some of the winners and losers.
Oh, my God, the state of New Jersey.
MetLife Stadium. I mean, this is huge. And I'll say it.
I feel like quoting Goodfellas. Well, I was lying in the weeds in Secaucus. There'll be a World Cup in the weeds in Secaucus. Well, close to Secaucus.
Kind of felt right. I mean, I know Los Angeles has hosted in 94. They hosted the Women's World Cup finals. But I don't know. Sometimes I don't mind a cliche. And I feel like America's biggest city, sort of a truly global. I mean, there's a lot of global cities in America. It's sort of the nature of this country. But New York is such a global hub that something about New York hosting a World Cup final feels right to me.
Well, it's New Jersey. Let's be clear about that.
So you're one of these guys you're a New Jersey Giants guy. Is this who are you? One of those people?
No. I'm not. I'm just saying the stadium is in New Jersey. Okay, let's give Jersey its props. Jersey gets overlooked far too easily, especially in industrial North Jersey. It's just some kind of New York overspill. These are unique places, and North Jersey in particular has a huge connection with like the early days of US soccer, the turn of the century, immigrants, Portuguese community there. Like it's a soccer hotbed. It may not seem like that because we always think of just the Giants and the Jets out in MetLife, but the stadium itself is not, it's not a good stadium.
No, it's not. It is not.
For the money that was spent on it, it's not. But in terms of like, you're right, somewhere close to New York, the greatest city in the world, also, that general area, the old stadium, had a big connection with soccer from the 94 World Cup and from the Cosmos. It does feel right to me. It feels more soccer-centric than Jerry World would have.
Oh, yes.
And way more than SoFi would have either.
And I don't know, it's just
accessibility.
Cooler. Yeah, it's just cooler. Like, Arlington, Texas. Oh, cool. So what? Like, I don't know, something about New York hosting the world's biggest sporting event is just cool to me.
Yeah. No, it is. It's great. And look, I used to be a regular out there, and it's nice. It's so weird though. Like that, I think my first ever soccer game was the Red Bulls. They had just become the Red Bulls, I guess, and they were playing Dallas. In some game, it was like 4 o'clock. And so, oh my God, on the turf. It was a nil-nil. It was the most awful game of football I've ever watched. And it was in the old stadium. But that stadium does have soccer, like serious soccer connections. So, again, having New York City on the doorstep, it's a cool, very American, unique World Cup final venue.
Now, the issues, like you said, you touched on the first one. I don't like the stadium. No. It's not a very nice stadium. Considering it's a modern stadium, nothing about it screams modern stadium. It just doesn't.
No. How it cost almost a billion to put up, I just cannot fathom.
When you look at some of the other stadiums kind of that and this era, I can't believe it's from the same era. I just can't. It's not, there's nothing really special about it. It's kind of a mess driving around there. It's not a fun place accessibility-wise.
The train that goes right into it, there's often crowding outside of that. It's not good either.
And by the way, even that train is like you have to transfer at Secaucus to another line to get there. And like you said, getting on and off that train, more so get after a game, trying to get on is not a fun experience.
I would say to the New York, New Jersey, whoever's in charge of that would be the Port Authority or the people who run the infrastructure between, you know, the PATH train and all. I think there needs major upgrades across the next 2 years. And I don't think it'll be spent. That's all I'm saying. There's not a lot of money right now. A lot of people complaining about infrastructure in New York, and yet we're going to upgrade the station to the stadium inside 2 years for a World Cup final. I have deep concerns about that part of it.
Yeah. And then, of course, the big one obviously is turf. Now, FIFA.
No, you know, they'll all be grass.
Right. But the issue will be what kind of grass, because there are different ways that they can go, and the options. One of them, just kind of bringing in like the portable grass patches to put down on turf, is not a great idea. So I don't know how they're going to do this.
Well, because it's a World Cup, it has to be pristine. So again, major money is going to be spent, and it will be. I remember they switched to grass, I think around 99 or 98, in the old Giant Stadium, and they did not have the patience for it, for the upkeep of it.
I think it's reprehensible.
I think it's reprehensible too.
With the money that the NFL has, with what these owners have, the fact that they're not willing to keep up a grass field is disgraceful.
I think it's disgraceful too. But there was grass down in the old stadium for 94. And if I remember correctly, it was a very good surface. So I expect a very good surface everywhere.
Has to be.
They can't be this patchwork quilt that we see get laying quickly for like Copa America. I mean, we've had a couple of grass tournaments in that stadium, and it's been varying degrees of not great.
They got it. If you're hosting the final, you do this right. You do this right.
Yeah,
you don't skimp on this.
No, there's no money. There's no. You're not going to the local. Gardening center to get some rolls of turf for the goal mouth, because it's looking a bit. The full amount of money must be spent on that.
Yeah, Frank's nursery ain't handling this. All right.
Uh-uh. And actually, we shouldn't have a problem, because if I remember correctly, there is a company in South Jersey who this is their whole thing: growing turf, growing grass surfaces, and exporting it. So it's perfect.
I'm sure that they probably have this figured out. I don't know who it's going to be, but they do it
for stadiums. They're top people. I'm assuming they're still there.
Top men. a couple other notes on this. So that we know now where the U.S. will be playing their first three matches: Los Angeles, Seattle, Los Angeles. Little bit surprised at first that all three games are going to be on the West Coast, two in the same city. I know some people on the East Coast were like, hey, what the F? But honestly, like, I'm fine with it. Keep them in the same time zone. Keep travel relatively tame, considering what it could be to have them crisscrossing the country. Not saying LA to Seattle is like a quick little jump up the coast. It's a bit of a hike, but like same time zone, whatever the things that they can do to give the US any kind of advantage of playing in their own country, do all of those things. And Seattle, they'll have, we know the noise in that building. We know the, you know, how great that fan base can be when they're behind a team. Generally fine with it. No issues there.
Yeah, no, I guess not. I mean,
And then, some of the other winners here, I can't tell. What do you think? Jerry World, AT&T Stadium in Texas, winner or loser? I can't tell. They didn't get the final, and they thought that they, I think they thought they were going to get it, but they have nine games, which is more than anyone else.
I think they're generally a winner, because as amazing as Jerry World is from the inside, it's not close to anything. Like it's not in Dallas.
No.
It's outside. It's not massively accessible. It's a very nice venue on the inside. So yeah. I think they're doing okay.
Sort of a nice little small win for Philly, I thought. six games, which is not amazing, but the July 4th game on America's 250th birthday, that could be quite a spectacle. Now, it could go one of a couple ways. So it's a round of 16 game on the 4th of July, 250th anniversary of the of July 4th of 1776. Really pretty unique moment here. It could be an incredible moment of patriotism if somehow the U.S. winds up in that game.
Oh, yeah.
Or it could be, I mean, JJ, nothing screams America's 250th birthday like, you know, Russia versus Iran. I mean, like, what could the, like, the chances that the U.S. wind up in that game are very, very slim.
I think it's
more likely to be kind of a random matchup of random countries than the U.S.
That's quite likely, but we must remember what soccer meant to the founding fathers. It was enormous. Like, I mean, they literally had to get Jefferson pull his hand away because he wanted to include it in the Bill of Rights. And he's like, stop writing things down. No more soccer. And he was very upset. Very upset by the omission of soccer.
I've heard that. That's a well-known fact about him. Nice win for Atlanta. Got a semifinal. I think that's good. Any losers? I kind of just looking, I mean, we knew this ahead of time, but just looking at a map of like where this tournament is basically taking place. Again, we knew the venues beforehand, but when you look at the Midwest, it's just, there's Kansas City and it's just like empty. I mean, are Dallas and Houston, do they consider themselves Midwesterners or Southwest? Like what is Texas? Is it Midwest? I should know this. I feel
Texas, it's the South, right?
It's the South. See, that's another. I don't know. Is it Midwest, South, or Southwest? I don't know what they consider themselves to be.
No, they're the South.
Okay.
Very South.
But, like, I don't know. No Chicago, no Minneapolis, no St. Louis, no Detroit. Like, it's just Kansas City kind of holding it down for a huge portion of the country.
Sorry, I should mention as well that it was James Madison and, you know, he proposed the amendments to the Bill of Rights, and Jefferson was saying, like, hey, put in something about having a World Cup final.
Oh, so we're calling back to the joke.
In New Jersey. No, I'm not letting this one go. And Madison was like, no, there's more important things than soccer. And Jefferson then got really upset and then stormed off. Wouldn't speak to him for like a week.
Oh, wow. John Adams, anything?
John Adams, he was a big golf guy. Huge. Okay.
Good. So that's about all I got. I'm excited for this, seeing now like how we know this is all going to go, where it's going to take place. You start to kind of get some of those
feelings.
Don't
get me wrong, by the way, I'm pumped for it. My opening gambit wasn't great because I was feeling upset for Canada and Mexico, but you know, I just thought, oh man, not great. But I'm really looking forward to this, like football in our backyard, a World Cup final in a place I can get to in 45 minutes to an hour, depending on the path.
Yeah. Have fun with that. When you see the ticket prices, JJ. Oh, yeah. For you to just so casually, flippantly lay out there. I mean, yeah, it's great. I can go to games. I can be there in half hour, 45. Yeah,
just
okay.
Bring my daughter along.
Spend $2,000? let's see how much fun that'll be for you. I think it'll be a lot of fun for the guys who run hedge funds that enjoy soccer.
Oh, yeah. I think what is it? What's that place in Connecticut? Greenwich, Connecticut. Guys up there are going to be snapping up the tickets.
Yeah. So
that's the grim reality of a World Cup. I've learned it from Champions League finals. When I'm there standing in a line for a cab, like with like 1,000 people and all these corporate guys getting off in their linen suits with their plastically surgically enhanced wives and getting into like cars, corporate cars, and being whisked away. Have I learned nothing about
I guess, yeah, that's true though. You've been to two Champions League finals in faraway places, so I guess nothing is too far or too out of reach for you.
And being Irish, you in this city and having a network of access, you can finagle your way into things.
Interesting.
Yeah,
I gotta latch on to you.
Way, they expected for Ireland versus Italy in the both countries' opening game of the World Cup at Giant Stadium, they expected it to be, because it was East Rutherford, because it was that part of the country, to be a full house full of Italian fans. And it was the other way around. It was it was almost all Irish. So we have ways. We have ways, Andrew.
You know a guy.
That is the key to living here, is to know a guy.
Yeah.
You must know a guy for every facet of your life. And then you'll get by.
And you know a guy who has World Cup access.
I actually do. Okay. Anyway. I don't know if he'll be play ball with me.
Oh, well, you got 2 years to work on it. So hop to it. I just like thinking of you like when we found out the Super Bowl was going to be here. Be like, oh, and it's great. I can be there in 30 minutes. Like, yeah.
Okay. It was so cold. It was so cold. Oh, my
but
God.
Think of how much worse it could have been, though. 2 days after the Super Bowl ended, there was like a huge, huge storm.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, if it was just like a 24 to 48 hours earlier, the nightmare that could have posed.
The NFL did. Really, they haven't had a cold winter Super Bowl since. They've had Minnesota, but it was indoors. Yeah. They won't do that again, and it's because of New York,
and because it was a favor too. The Jets and Giants paid for that stadium. There was no they were giving a favor to the owners who paid for their stadium. Basically, that's how they know a guy, and they were able to get a Super Bowl.
That's how you do it.
Yep. So there you go. U.S., L.A., Seattle, and Los Angeles again. Looking forward to it. Should be fun. We go from that, JJ. Let's go to the Premier League now. What a weekend. Holy cow. We wondered, for the last few weeks, we've kind of been wondering, are we going to get the three-team title race? I don't know. Are Arsenal, are they in it? Are they not? And then we knew going into this game, well, this will go a long way in determining. This won't necessarily tell us definitively that we will, but this game could have told us, okay, well, we won't. Arsenal are not going to be a part of it. Well, Arsenal are still alive. They are still, at least for the moment, a part of whatever Premier League title race you deem there to be. I wanted to ask you before even getting into the game. It's been a while because Liverpool have generally been very good.
Sure.
But I know your MO after a difficult loss, long, soulful walk in Brooklyn. Did we get one of those yesterday at about 1:30 Eastern time?
Booked in for tonight. I've postponed it. I've got all the podcasts loaded up.
Wait a minute. Soulful walk is in the moment. You postponed your emotions?
Yes. Yes. I'm Irish. I don't just postpone them. Sometimes I bury them and then they explode many decades later in a haze of drink and recriminations. No, I postponed it. Yeah, I told you yesterday I was otherwise engaged, so I had to put on my big boy pants, push it to the side, get on with the work that had to be done yesterday, the meeting that had to happen. And now I'll take the long, soulful walk this evening. I have a few podcasts, two podcasts in particular that I will listen to rake over the coals of this. I tweeted yesterday, it was Arsenal's best first half. No, this was at halftime, obviously. Arsenal's best first half performance in months and Liverpool's worst in at least 2 or 3 months. And I can't remember the last time Liverpool were that poor.
It was unbelievable when they scored at the end of the half.
Like crazy.
It felt like such an injustice.
Crazy
and it was such
stuff.
a weird goal, such a gift in some ways to Liverpool.
I mean, when we talk about they threw one in, they literally threw one in. And Liverpool hadn't looked like creating anything in the game. Look, Liverpool were especially poor, but Arsenal were especially at it. Here's Jamie Carragher, and he's talking about how Arsenal felt going into this game, and I couldn't agree more.
There was a desperation about Arsenal. It felt bigger to Arsenal. That's not so much a criticism of Liverpool, but it felt almost like they had to win. They knew if they had lost, they'd have been out of it. And I think that's why we probably saw some of the scenes at the end of the game. And you saw Arteta celebrating, running up and down the line. It felt huge for Arsenal. I think that was just, you could see that.
Like there was this is a now or never feel about Arsenal. We are at this. We are totally going for this. Between their intensity, the way they won the ball in midfield, the way they did, they suffocated Liverpool, never let them really get going, dominated the ball. Liverpool didn't at any point in the game get into a rhythm. They had one shot on target.
Yeah,
they went in at halftime 1-1. How that happened? Crazy, absolutely crazy. Arsenal were dominant in midfield. Rice and Jorginho broke things up superbly. Controlled the centre. Odegaard and Havertz playing in the channels. Completely discombobulated McAllister and the Liverpool centre backs too. Arsenal also targeted the left side, the right hand side of Liverpool's defence in transition. Talk a bit more about that. They got in behind so often, Martinelli down the left-hand side, that it was scary. It meant the centre-backs had to come out of the middle. They somehow gave up a goal and were level at the break, which made no sense. And were it not for a gift, the weird thing is, were it not for a gift right at the time Liverpool had established some sort of a foothold in the game, this game could conceivably have ended as a draw. And that would have been, based on the first half, at least, a travesty.
Yeah, although not altogether shocking, because one of the concerns with Arsenal this season has been, can they score? Their ability to get goals, especially against a pretty strong defensive unit in this Liverpool team.
And I go as far as to say, apart from the first goal, which was really good goal, I would say that kind of concern about Arsenal hasn't gone away. Like, when you see Saka attacking that cross in the first half, and you're like, how has he not scored? And people trying to give Joe Gomez credit for just laying a hand on him. That should have been a bullet header to the back of the net, 2-0. Like, it's crazy that they missed that. I don't think Arsenal's scoring problems have suddenly been solved because they knocked 3 in against Liverpool. You had that unbelievable calamity to make it 2-1. And then the ball that somehow went up between Alisson's legs and into the net for 3-1, the Trossard goal. I'm not saying Arsenal didn't deserve to win this game. They absolutely did. Absolutely.
Well, they did because...
But I'm not coming out of that saying, well, I was wrong about all the things I said about Arsenal and the top of their attack now. There's no way.
It's also why, ultimately, I'm not ultra worried about Liverpool in some ways. Like, I don't know that I saw anything here other than the fact that, look, their attack was pretty limp in this game. And I give Arsenal full credit for that. They had the pressure on Liverpool constantly. They saw a lot of the ball. They were relentless. But from the Liverpool perspective, like, there were things that went wrong for them in this game that I just don't think are the norm. Like, Statman Dave posted, Alisson is the best. I think he's the best keeper in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Alisson in this game, 9 times he lost possession, 3 goals conceded, 2 for 11 on long balls completed, 1 error leading to a goal, and a minus 1.61 goals prevented. Like, I don't see that as the norm. I don't suddenly think, oh, Alisson, I guess he sucks now. Like, I think he had a bad game. You talk about the 3 goals, even the first one. I mean, look, Odegaard plays such a great ball into Havertz to start that. But Alisson, he jumps off his line quickly and stops it. But the ball bounces to Bukayo Saka, who finishes with relative ease. You know, the second goal, obviously weird, kind of fluky, like a ball. It's just a ball over the top that happened to land in a spot that made it tricky to deal with. Alisson doesn't do well. Van Dijk should have just smashed it away. They just got caught there. Even the third one, look, props to Trossard, makes one man miss and then everything opens up. I mean, it shouldn't be quite that easy. I know Liverpool are a man down at that point, but even the goal itself, like, yeah, it went through Alisson's legs. Maybe he should have done better. Took a huge deflection. So he was going either for far post or trying to center one. I don't know, but it deflects in between Alisson's legs. So yeah, like, Liverpool's attack left a lot to be desired. They're going to get Salah back soon. I don't know. You know, even if they don't, I don't know exactly what the prognosis is. I still feel pretty good. Darwin Nunez, whatever you want to say about him, he was hurt, didn't play a big chunk of this game. But he's a havoc wreaker when he's out there. So, you know, I don't know. It's not good for Liverpool because they could have killed off one of their competitors for the title, but I don't see it as something that will suddenly derail their season.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I'll tell you what.
Really?
I can't prognosticate and say, well, this won't derail. I don't expect it to derail the season because I do think Nunez to come back, Salah to come back, changes things for Liverpool. I just have to say how disappointed I was in two players in particular. And we talk about depth all the time, guys coming in, next man up, and that the strength of Manchester City and Liverpool in this period has been the ability for them to go deep into their bench, or not even deep, but just go into their bench and have guys come in and do jobs. Like, we said it about Conor Bradley. Liverpool didn't miss a beat at right back with Conor Bradley coming in. That's brilliant. Kwanzaa playing at centre back when he needed to, didn't miss a beat. And even to an extent, although he wasn't great yesterday, Joe Gomez filling in for Robertson or coming, you know, playing in multiple positions for Liverpool. You know, that's good. The right-hand side of Liverpool's act, like Gakpo and Gravenberg, footballing missed. Like, you cannot be that ineffective. They didn't help at all when Trent Alexander-Arnold, as he does, will vacate that fullback spot to step into midfield. And then Martinelli always had acres to run into. It's not 1993 where your wingers stay, you know, it's always the fullback's job mainly to defend. It's everyone's job as a collective to defend. Those guys, for guys who have played at a very high level, both before coming to Liverpool, and in the case of Gakpo, was seen as gazumping United to get him to come in. This wasn't good enough. It's really, really poor. Very, very poor. Liverpool generally, though, they seemed off it. They didn't seem to be able to get to the collective pelt and the collective tenor and tone. And like Arsenal were like, this is a game we have to win. And Liverpool were much, much more passive. The way the Arsenal midfield, the way that both Havertz and Odegaard would split and get into the channels and cause them problems. There was always a ball. If it wasn't for Havertz, if he was picked up, then it was for Odegaard. The centre-backs didn't know whether to go with them, whether to drop off. And then when one would go and Konate wouldn't be close to anybody, there was massive, enormous gaps opened up in the centre of that attack. I wonder, are other teams, well, obviously other teams aren't going to be always as good as Arsenal, but are they going to look at that and think, well, there's a way to get at Liverpool now? Yeah, just bad performance. Other doubts come in, you know, McAllister playing as a makeshift six, playing deeper in the Liverpool midfield because Liverpool couldn't go and get Caicedo and get the couple of targets that they wanted in centre midfield during the transfer. It's been fine so far. Are we now catching up with that because we just don't have that kind of player? A lot of questions. I want to put it down as just a bad day at the office. I think that's the way you want to go because it's rare you're going to see Van Dijk and Alisson just collapse like that.
Weird.
Very weird. But the general feeling of the game, I think they were upset by the changes that had to be made. I think it's a credit to the way Conor Bradley has played that the untimely passing of his father meant obviously Bradley wasn't going to play and they missed him. Like they missed him. I think Bradley versus Martinelli, in the way that Bradley is a more orthodox fullback, would have been a better matchup than the way it worked out. But I also think that they were unbalanced having Gakpo and Gravenberg on the same side.
Incredible how quickly we're saying that about Conor Bradley. That in a game of this kind of importance against Arsenal, with some of the players that Liverpool have at that position.
So that was the debate we had before the game on Sunday. A couple of my friends were like, would Bradley have even started? And I'm like, I think he would have.
You said that the other day. You said you didn't think Klopp would have changed anything.
No, I don't think it would have changed a thing. And then he was kind of forced to with the Nunez injury and Bradley's bereavement. And then it's a different team. Miss Mo Salah, that's for sure. Szoboszlai, we're not talking about that.
Yeah.
Szoboszlai being out of the side was not good because what came in wasn't, Gravenberg wasn't better. That's part of it. And I don't think there's no fair-minded Arsenal fan. I'm sure after a couple hours after the game yesterday, Arsenal supporters, the sensible ones were like, great win, but probably surprised at how poor Liverpool were.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair way of looking at it. A couple other final notes on this from the Arsenal side. One, I was going to mention Jorginho, Declan Rice. You already did. They were fantastic. Jorginho especially. Lot of praise for him afterwards. It was funny because who was it? Was it Robbie Earl on NBC's broadcast? He was like, no one, he said something like after the game where he's like, no one's going to talk about this. He's going to go forgotten man, but Jorginho, I got to say. And then right after they cut to like him being handed the man of the match, like it was, yeah, we're going to talk about it. He was excellent.
He was.
You know, Arteta, Declan Rice, they spoke afterwards about not just what he can do. I mean, he was so good in his distribution, breaking up play, but they talked a lot about his leadership. How he's won things, so games like this, he's the right man to have out there. He knows how to keep things calm. And I think you saw that. He was very, very composed, very good in this game. With regards to kind of beyond just the game itself, I remember when Arsenal first started playing in the stadium, there was a lot of concern. Oh, the atmosphere is done. They can't generate like that place.
It
wasn't good. It was not good for a long time.
Yeah.
But I think you are that place now. It is a cauldron these last couple seasons. It is loud in there. It is raucous in there. I think it just goes to show, like, if you think about when Arsenal made that transition into that stadium, it was kind of like peak Wenger had just sort of happened, and now they were kind of on the other side of it. Maybe momentum and, like, it had just slowed down. Then you got into, like, the bad days of Wenger where the fans and the team just were not connected. Like, you give people a reason to cheer, they'll do it. Especially a fan base like Arsenal that cares a ton about their team. And right now they have that. And that plays, I don't want to hear, like, next time a team moves into a new stadium, I don't want to hear, oh, it's not going to be like the old place. People can make the place. And I think if you give people a reason to get excited, they'll do it. And
some,
I think you're
some buildings are conducive to noise. And the old Highbury was so tight and so compact that the fans were on top of you. It was that old style stadium. So definitely it was conducive to it. They moved to Arsenal, you know, or excuse me, they moved to the Emirates. It had much more kind of corporate boxes.
Yeah, it looks like a stadium. Highbury was different. Like that was unique and intimate. And yeah, the Emirates is a conventional stadium, but it can get as loud in there as any other stadium in the Premier League. And then sort of regards to that, JJ, I want to give American fans a little bit of credit for something, because I feel like it's a conversation that doesn't happen in this country in the way that it seems to abroad. And it's a conversation that I kind of have no use for that we've talked about before. The celebration police. Boy, the celebration police had a big problem with Arsenal after this one, whether it was Arteta running up and down the sideline or Odegaard afterwards taking a picture of the photographer. This was a huge game. I mean, this was being dubbed. We can say whatever we want about it, but for Arsenal, any hope of them winning a title wasn't just us. I mean, the media, fans, this was kind of dubbed as, if you lose this game, your title race is over.
Yeah.
It's just funny that like we build it up into this thing that's maybe bigger than whatever it really is, but the media and fans build a thing up. And then when the players celebrate commensurate with what we built it up to, we rip them for it. I am so sick of celebration police nonsense. You want to celebrate after a game? Go ahead. Now, you might have to gather yourselves for what comes after. Like, you can't go too far. But like in the moment, you said it once about Everton. When they got celebration policed and ticketed, that's not how joy works.
No, it's not. I mean, but you can make... I'm okay with people making comments within. What I believe is you should. There's no way you should tell anyone they shouldn't celebrate, but you can make comments on the manner in which they do that. That's okay. And Arsenal as well. You see, we're not far enough away from Arsenal as like kind of. I'm watching a lot of Top Boy, which is based in London. Gangsters in London. So a lot of phraseology is coming to mind. But like when Arsenal were on a joke thing. When they were the banter club of the Premier League and they were just the kind of the butt of everybody's jokes. So like people are still in that reflexive mode. So when they see Arsenal celebrate a win in the middle of February or the start of February, they get on that again and they like to have a go at Arsenal fans. Arsenal fan TV has a lot to do with this too. Arsenal, even in the bad years, were king of motors. I mean, there's more memes.
Oh, absolutely.
There's more memes, GIFs of Arsenal fans losing their S or saying dumb things or expecting crazy stuff than probably any other club in the Premier League. And Arsenal Fan TV went a long way to create that. And people are still kind of, remember we said Arsenal Fan TV, it's probably better for them when Arsenal are bad, right? And it's certainly better for the rest of the league. And people kind of are still in that moment where Arsenal are bad. And so when they, you know, when Odegaard takes a picture of the cameraman, you know, and stuff like that, they kind of roll their eyes and think of this as very Arsenal-y behavior. I don't have a huge problem. Odegaard taking a picture of the cameraman was a bit, for me, it was a bit,
so nothing.
But I guess it's nothing.
Coach P... 1625 on Reddit. Yeah. Today just made me think of the Micah Richards quote, when it's Arsenal, everyone wants to pile on, which is kind of what you're speaking to a little bit.
Yeah.
He goes on to say, thankfully, the U.S. coverage did a great job breaking down the game, but it seems like the U.K. coverage spent most of the time covering the celebrations and not the game. Is it just because I'm an Arsenal fan that I'm noticing this, or does this happen for most clubs? I think it happens for a lot of clubs.
Celebration police. The celebration police in this case was Gary Neville, who said it was immature. It was an immaturity there of Arsenal to act this way. Gary Neville was brought up in a dressing room which was run by Roy Keane and Alex Ferguson. Fergie founded the Celebration Police. He is the very first chief inspector of the Celebration Police. His own side won the Scottish Cup, and on television straight after, he said how they had no right to celebrate it because it was a disgraceful performance.
Incredible quote. If people haven't seen it, you got to go find it.
We've got standards going back years here. And to go out and play like that is an absolute disgrace. I don't want to know about a cup, you know, all this stuff.
Incredible.
We've played it before on this podcast.
Yeah.
So you come in that environment and then you see you know, Odegaard acting the way he's acting or whatever. But also, here's a, there's another thing that's a factor as well. You talk about Klopp regularly. It just gets people's backs up by the way he behaves on the sideline. Nobody does it better than Mikel Arteta. Mikel Arteta is a maniac on the sideline. Mm-hmm. He's Diego Simeone on roids. He rubs everyone up the wrong way with the way he acts. Why are we pretending that his actions aren't also feeding into this? Here's Arsenal celebrating when their manager is an absolute mental case when it comes to this. I mean, Richard Keys has how many blogs? Richard Keys has... No, and I'm not saying Richard Keys' neuroses are the things he's not into are reason to go by. But Richard Keys has... He could write a book complaining about Arteta and the way he acts on the sideline. And I think that feeds into it, too.
Well, we got a response to that on Reddit from ProfessionalBet4992, who wrote this, who says, "I'm not in a neutral position to comment here as a Spurs fan, but I don't think the celebration itself is the problem. It's the people doing it." This is a good quote here from ProfessionalBet4992. "Your manager isn't exactly the most calm or even normal man. As a rival fan, he embodies everything that annoys me about your fans. I guarantee you, if it was somehow Ange celebrating, far less people would comment because he's not completely insufferable for everyone and not support your club." So he's saying that the celebration police are not necessarily mad at the celebrations, but it's like you're saying, Arteta.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
people just don't like him. And so maybe that's why they don't like the way he conducts himself. So that's why the celebrations are being policed.
It's all part of it. It all adds into it. I mean, but like Arsenal fans should absolutely celebrate that and enjoy that. I'll tell you who else is celebrating. Manchester City fans.
Yeah, well, we should say we're recording this before their game today. They play Monday afternoon.
They were the big winners here. Huge for them. And with two games in hand, I hope the grim inevitability of a procession to a Manchester City title is avoided. I hope that's not what we're staring down after yesterday's result. My fear is that a nagging feeling that won't go away is that's what we're looking at.
I think if you ask 10 people right now who they think is going to win the title, what do you think? 7 or 8 would say Man City?
1,000%. Yeah.
I think so too. That's kind of where I'm. That's who I'm picking.
7, 8.
Let's see. Let's continue here, JJ. I'll tell you, one of the not winners of the weekend, a loser, you might even say, Chelsea.
Oh, Christ.
Holy cow. They lose at home to Wolves. They went up 1-0. It's easy to forget that the way this game started, they probably should have scored in the 4th minute with Nkunku.
Yeah.
And then they did score in the 19th on a really nice goal. Like Enzo Fernandez into Connor Gallagher, who played it back. Who was it? Palmer finished off the move. But it's just a very well-worked goal. Nice passing. Good finish. And you think, wow, like Chelsea look pretty good here. But then they couldn't have shut off any quicker. They're still celebrating that goal. And then Caicedo, he was the one who made the pass in. He had the assist on the goal. After making a brilliant pass to set it up, he shuts off, loses possession in midfield, and off Wolves go. And we're talking about some fluky things that went against Liverpool. A little bit of that in this game, too. Huge, horrible deflection. A big one, a significant one. But just like that, any good feelings that Chelsea had from the first 20 minutes were gone. And Wolves had tied it, and they would go on to keep scoring and continue scoring and continue scoring. I mean, so much of this game, you know, we know a lot of the things Wolves like to do. Chelsea just could not contain Wolves' counterattack. Bit them, it felt like, time and time again throughout the course of this game. Just a really discouraging performance from Chelsea. And, like, start to wonder a little bit with them. Not to go too far. I know they're in a cup final. But you start to wonder, like, where is rock bottom here? Because it does feel like this can get a whole hell of a lot worse. So I saw this. I was reading this, JJ, from TalkSport. They had on an a financial fair play expert and financial advisor. Stefan Borson was on Jim White and Alex Crook's Deadline Day show and said, "In my mind, there's certainly trouble on the horizon, and they, Chelsea, will certainly fail FFP for the current season. Unless, and it seems to be very unlikely, that by June 30th this year, they sell well over £100 million of players. But the window they can now do that is going to be very small because this season is going to finish, and then we've got the Euros. So if you look at someone like Conor Gallagher, he's going to be in the Euros team on June 14th. So if they want to ship him before June 30th, they've got to move very quickly. And again, the likely buyers are going to know that Chelsea need to sell players, which is pretty much what happened, JJ, with Conor Gallagher in the January window, where Chelsea wanted Tottenham to pay somewhere between 50 to 80 million. And Daniel Levy said, no, thanks, we'll wait. We'll wait for your situation to get really dire, and we'll see where this goes.
Called a fire sale.
So that, but that's the problem. So the problem right now, if you're Chelsea, is twofold. One, they have to get rid of good players because those are the only guys who are worth anything, and they have to get rid of their homegrown ones because that's where you make the most money. So you're talking good players slash homegrown. You're talking Gallagher. You're talking Reece James. I mean, these are the guys that Chelsea have to get rid of. And even if they could sign players, are they a desirable destination now? Like, they're not qualifying for Champions Leagues, and it's feeling more and more likely that they're going to fall into some sort of PSR penalty in their future. Like, I don't know. I mean, they were bad last year. They're maybe even worse this year. And whatever good that they have, it feels like they're going to have to offload those guys, possibly for reduced rates, because teams know how desperate they are. Where's rock bottom to this?
Yeah. And there's also the fact that it increasingly feels like the manager just can't change this, that he can't do anything with this team. And they have to do something with that outlay of money and the players that they've spent money on. And the easiest thing to do is the manager. Like, I feel like I keep saying, well, Chelsea can't keep chopping and changing. That can't be the only reason to keep Maurizio Pochettino. They were just clueless, man. Absolutely clueless. Now, I know they have injuries at the centre-back position, but the idea that they've continued with Thiago Silva, I mean, it was a weekend of centre-backs, Konate, Virgil van Dijk, Dan Byrne, we'll get to, who was playing at left-back.
Even Saliba for Arsenal on Liverpool's goal.
Getting absolutely burned or making mistakes. This is really, really bad situation for Chelsea that's developing right now. Bowley's made an absolute mess of this. Total pig's ear of it. And we are going to talk about Wolves in a second. I thought Wolves were excellent.
Yes.
But Chelsea just, it gets worse and worse.
Well, it's just signings that they could not afford to go wrong, like Mudryk and Caicedo. You can't spend that kind of money and have those signings go wrong. Now, they could change. Mudryk, I don't know. I'm starting to worry about what we have here. But Caicedo is still relatively new with this club.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not.
But it also shows, we've talked about how the specific system that De Zerbi played for Caicedo, and he's coming into this kind of Pochettino system, which isn't really a system yet because Pochettino didn't sign any of these guys. It feels like Poch is in another position. If you look what he did at Southampton and Tottenham, which are his two successes in management, comes into Southampton, he's got work with young players, build a team, lower budgets. And even at Tottenham, there was a sense of, not a sense of, there were young players to deal with.
They were the youngest, I believe, statistically the youngest team in the league when he took
right,
them over.
Right, but he had control over who was coming to the club, mm-hmm. who was coming in and out. He was a part of that. This feels as if this was built for him by someone else. Build is too strong a term, but it was thrown together by someone. And now he's in this position. The jobs that he's failed at have been the big jobs. PSG, massive superstars, very hard to deal with. And now he's here at Chelsea, and it's not so much massive superstars, but massive transfers, players that he didn't sign. And it just doesn't feel, I can't see a turning point. I can't see it. They're not getting better. It's February now.
No, I'm wondering.
And again, we go back to what Wenger said to us in the interview. How, you know, change the culture, set up an idea of how you want to play. And Wenger said 3 months. We're past the 3 month stage now, well past it. And again, the top managers, and this was something Pochettino did at Tottenham and something he did at Southampton. The top really good coaches were able to come in and they can make, you can see the instant changes. But it just seems too hard with the way Chelsea has run for him to do that.
Nicholas Jackson, JJ, another
oh my God.
Header at the
oh
back post.
God.
I mean, like, These signings, they've spent a ton of money, and have any of them really worked out? It's pretty bleak. I wonder, has the only person whose stock maybe risen here, Graham Potter? Like, it's not like things have gone well since he left. Like, it might shine a light on the fact that, like, yeah, maybe it was more than just the manager.
Right. And Potter had to deal with, what was it? He complained hugely about, he had to have two full training sessions going for the amount of players he had at the club at the time.
Yeah.
And he found it very hard. He had to chop and change. He never got a chance to get a rhythm. Potter has, what, two less wins, though, I think. I think Pochettino has two more wins than him. So that's not a rip-roaring success. And I genuinely feel like Potter would have been suited to a big club, but a more stable club. And the only real clubs out there that were kind of in the market at the time were, well, the only one that was Chelsea, really. I feel bad for him now. I think it probably shines a better light on what he had to deal with.
On the other side of this, I know we wanted to mention Wolves as well. Got this on Reddit from Hello, I Am a Narwhal, who writes, just want to point out that Wolves are top half in February after losing their manager less than a week before the start of the season because Lopetegui was upset that the owners wouldn't spend due to fears of FFP penalties. Even better, it's the same squad that Lopetegui walked out on and Wolves still haven't spent. If anything, Wolves have gotten rid of more players than they've added. Obviously, I'm biased as a Wolves fan, but just something I'll keep in mind when people discuss Lopetegui as a potential appointment for any manager vacancies. So I guess this is the opposite of the Graham Potter effect. Like, Wolves' success are making Lopetegui look worse, whereas Chelsea's failures are making Potter look better.
But if you look at what Gary O'Neill was like, someone's got to be in for Matheus Cunha, you know, age-wise, just the way he's playing right now. If you look at what Matheus Cunha has been able to do under Gary O'Neill versus what he was able to do under Lopetegui, it's night and day. He starts all the time. His goal participation, like, he's so crucial to them. It's 41%. He has 9 goals and 6 assists. He's been absolutely fantastic. But, like, Wolves, if you look at that, like, that front line for Wolves, Cunha, Sarabia, and Neto, and you watched it at the weekend, like, they're class.
Neto. Like, Neto. I haven't updated my Andrews people in a while. He's on the team. I don't know at the end of the season if he'll make the actual Premier League team of the season. He's on mine. The guy is fantastic. They're going to have a hard time. If they're worried about FFP stuff, they're going to have a hard time keeping him.
23.
He's fantastic.
23. I wonder what... Hang on a second, Andrew. Can I just check? What's his agency? Let me just have a look. Oh, it's...
Is it Gestifute?
It's Gestifute.
Oh, shocking.
Who would have thunk it? Oh, mercy. Well, he's fabulous, though. He's absolutely fabulous to watch. And they're very good. They were very, very good. And, like, they've got players like Atnori as well, who, I mean, on his day is just absolutely brilliant player. And then right in the middle of it, like, keeping the whole thing together, is they've got a veteran like Craig Dawson, who's like having... How many Indian summers can someone have to your career? Like, he seems like he's on his second or third. Like, because remember when West Ham signed him from Watford? We were like, Craig Dawson? And then he had a good spell there. And then he's having an even better spell, I would say, with Wolves. So, credit to them. It's all right saying, look, Chelsea are this, Chelsea are that. But they were dismantled by Wolves, and Wolves deserve a lot of credit for that. And I don't know if we have many Wolves supporting listeners on this podcast, but we do not. To say we don't give them their flowers is an understatement. We they don't get any bouquets off us. They don't even get a single rose. So hopefully we've redressed that slightly.
They're up into 10th, 1 point behind Newcastle, 1 point ahead of Chelsea. Wolves, like you said, a team whose manager walked out on them with a week to go before the season. Gary O'Neill has to be in the running for manager of the season.
Yeah, and you know what? I love traditional names doing well. We had a listener called Trevor. Love to hear Trev. I love a Gary doing well. You know, we've got Jurgens, we've got Joseph Peps, we've got all that. Gary. It's so important for me.
I've said before, Gary is going extinct as a name. Yeah. There are actual studies on this that the rate with which we're losing that name, it'll be gone. I don't know what year, but cherish the Garys while we have them, because they're not going to be here for long.
We got a title for the pod. Cherish the Garys. That's just so great. That's so. I will say this. I need the name Gary to survive. I just feel it's just a great name. It's a great English.
It's.
I was thinking if I got
we'll
a dog,
we'll be all right without that.
No,
name.
So I love giving dogs, imagining dogs with people's name. Now, usually I go like upper class, like Sebastian or Cecil. But imagine Gary, your dog Gary. It's perfect.
Well, no? They're going to have to live on in canine form because people have got no use for that name anymore. Let's continue, JJ. Tottenham, Everton. Interesting game at Goodison. Tottenham drop a couple costly points in stoppage time. 2-2, your final. So the talking points on this are pretty simple. Vicario, who has arguably been Tottenham's signing of the season. I would have said Madison, but Madison missed such a big chunk. And Vicario, because of the way Tottenham play, they need a keeper who is A, good, but B, aggressive and smart. And, you know, he's done all those things. He's been very good. But an Achilles heel seemingly has been revealed here. And that is the corner kick. We saw it against Manchester City for Tottenham to crash out of the FA Cup. And we saw it, what would you say, about 1,000 times in this game for Tottenham? It was unbelievable. Sean Dyche afterwards said it's not something they were targeting. Well, then you're a bad coach because you should have. I don't know if he was telling the truth there. Maybe he didn't want to embarrass anyone or whatever. But, I mean, why not? So, you know, Ange afterwards pointed towards the referees a little bit, saying they're reluctant to call contact in the box. Maybe he's saying that publicly because he wants to come to his keeper's defense because he knows that this is going to be a thing moving forward now. So he's got to get in the ref's ear. But behind the scenes, I'm sure they're saying to this guy, you just have to be stronger in there. I don't know what else to say. This is a thing now. He's going to be targeted incessantly.
Can you imagine what Brentford are going to do next chance they get?
Well, they're going to have to wait a while.
Oh, yeah.
They just played him. So. Oh, yeah. It's going to be a while.
And Brentford did other things that we can talk about.
Yeah. But I mean, everyone is going to do this. Now,
can I just expand this for a second? He's got to come and catch the winner. The free kick on the winner.
You don't think that was a little far out for him to be able to? I don't know that he could have.
Oh, it's flicked. It's flicked on.
Oh, and you're talking about after it hit Romero's head.
Yes.
I thought you meant catch it. Okay.
No, come and yeah.
I don't know. I'd have to see that again. That wasn't something that struck me.
Why is he not flying at it? I don't like saying this about any athlete. I don't like saying this about a person. But there's something. I'm going to say cowardly. Not cowardly is not a good word.
It's out there now. You said it.
He does not. He does not want to be hit. He's gone down after the goal's gone in. The Branthwaite goal.
Yeah.
He should have come straight through that ball. And he's gone down like he's hurt or whatever. It was a case of the Onanas. If I'm going to criticize Onana for being rooted like he was against Wolves. By the way, what a game we missed there. That was unbelievable. Last week.
Yeah,
we just recorded the wrong side of it. What a great game.
One of the games of the season.
Oh, absolutely. But like on the Wolves, I think either the equalizer or one of the Wolves goals, like Onana's rooted. Do something. Move your feet. Do anything. And I think this is a clear case where Vicario should come and get that ball in some, whether it's a punch, whether it's a fling himself at the ball, whatever. Do something.
I got to look at that one again. I mean, I was more focused on the first one because the first one is clearly the thing that's becoming an issue for him. But I will say this, to put on my Tottenham underpants for a second. So if this is going to be the way that it is, the secret is out, but not just on Vicario. The secret is out, period. Every team should be doing this on corners because a precedent is now being set. You can be physical. Like, we now know, and I'm not saying teams don't. I know you see teams bodying up with a keeper, but, like, there's a spotlight on this now. You can be physical with a goalkeeper while the ball is in the air. It can be done. So every team, like, corners are hard to score on. The statistics show that, like, you rarely score off of these things. So this should be now what everyone is doing. Put a lot of bodies around the keeper. Put the ball in the 6-yard box and nudge or more than nudge the keeper while he's in the air. Because like right now, Vicario is being exposed in this way. But something tells me that a lot of keepers would probably have this same kind of problem. So, you know, maybe keepers know now, okay, well, I got to kill guys to get to the ball and I'm going to dare the referee to call a penalty there.
100%. But like,
yeah,
or even create a system where Tottenham have a player drop in front of Vicario, create a cordon sanitaire, create some kind of a safety zone.
Yeah, that worries me too, though, because then you can have an Everton player who pushes Van de Ven into Vicario, and they and now it's not now it'll never get called because it's Van de Ven hitting Vicario. So
well, he's got hard nut. He's got a hard.
He has to, absolutely 100%. But I think Tottenham should do this too. Every team should do this on corners. This should be the only way you take corners. Throw put two guys around a keeper and put the ball inside the 6 yard box and see what happens.
Whip it in.
Yeah,
whip it in.
So another note sort of off of this, more so pertaining to the second goal. So I talked on the last podcast about Tottenham and Ange maybe bending a little bit from his system because he brought on against Brentford, nursing that one goal lead, brought on Dragozan. They had three center backs, pretty much went with a back five to end that game and see it out. And they did. They succeeded. And I said, I think that's probably wise to show a little bit of tactical flexibility, move off of your wide open attack minded system in a one goal game in stoppage time. So that goal goes in, JJ, the Romero off his head breath. I mean, it's going in the net. It would have been an own goal. Brathwaite taps it in to finish it off. So that happens. I get a tweet right after that. And I don't want to, I'm not going to rip anyone from this guy, Kyle Logue, who he's a good listener to the pod. Spurs fan, I think. So like, I'm not mad at him, but people can disagree on stuff.
I saw this.
He tweets right away at A Gunling. Still like the back five sub. Come on, man. Deal with a free kick. All right. Defend an effing free kick.
Christian
Romero heads a ball backwards into his own goal on a free kick. And your takeaway is shouldn't have brought on an extra defender. What? But what is like, I don't know. It just feels to me like one has nothing to do with the other. Like, JJ, if you and I went to Disney World together, but you didn't want to go, you complained it's going to be too crowded, the lines are too long, it's too hot. Then we get there. I'm walking off the plane. I take an awkward step in the jetway. I sprain my ankle. You tell me, told you we shouldn't have gone to Disney World.
Right.
Huh? Disney's not what ruined the trip. Was the back five the problem here? No. A damn free kick.
Yeah,
Romero 100%. Has one fall off his head and go backwards into his own goal. Like, stop. Fine. I've said I'm fine with Ange Ball. I like it. I love it. It's fun to watch. I've made peace with the fact that Spurs are going to concede a lot of chances. I get it. And they do it because they think they can get more going back the other way. But, like, I'm not going to move off this. They brought on Dragozan in the 89th minute. So you had essentially 90 minutes of playing Ange Ball to get a third goal and give you some space. You didn't. So I'm okay at that point. Bearing down, seeing out the game defensively in stoppage time. You want to keep playing Ange Ball with a one-goal lead on the road in stoppage time? You want fullbacks in central forward positions with tired center halves behind them? I mean, let's be reasonable. Like, still like the back five sub. Come on. Like, that's not what cost them.
No, it isn't. And boy, did it irritate you.
It did, because I was already pissed at the game. And, like, here's the other thing, too, is, like, I get that. So, like, I get that tweet. And this, now I'm really, my insecurities, I'm laying them all out on the table for all of you to see. Because, like, on the last pod, what were the two things that I talked about with Tottenham? I talked about kind of liking this idea that Ange, at the end, in stoppage time, is going to try to see the game out if it's tight. I think that's a wise move. I think that's smart. And the other thing that I talked about, JJ, was what? Richarlison has proven to be worth the money. So what's the tweet I get after this game? People only want to fight with me. Oh, so you still like your back five? Okay, fine. Say that. Didn't get any Richarlison tweets. Guy scored 2 goals, 9 goals in his last 8 games, 7th most goals in the Premier League right now. Didn't see anybody saying, hey, good call. Richarlison does look like he's worth the money. People just want to fight, JJ. That's all.
Of course. And again, Twitter X is set up for that. It's absolutely set up for that. Two really good finishes. Really, really good finishes. And you're talking about you being pissed. See how pissed Richarlison was at the end of the game. So annoyed that he didn't come away with the win.
Because the script was written. This was like a crowning moment for him.
How did you like his non-celebration celebrations?
Fine with it.
Yeah.
Again, not going to police any of these. So, guys, celebrate how you want to celebrate. Everton, again, we talked about after listening to the Lampard interview. That, like, I know Everton fans in the moment, I think, were mad that Richarlison left. He loves that club. And like Lampard said, we've all come to find out because of Everton's PSR issues. It wasn't like Richarlison was like, get me out of here. I got to go. F this club. It was not like that. Everton needed him to leave. He was one of the only guys who they could get a commensurate amount of money for it to help them climb out of the PSR situation that, by the way, was so bad that even that couldn't climb them out, couldn't get them out of it. So, like, he had to go. So I think Richarlison, he still probably has great affection for that club. So I don't know. I respected it. I thought it was because those were great goals for him and big, important goals. Yeah. And, you know, he started the first one was a great goal. He started to celebrate and he stopped. Yeah. The announcer, who was it? Was it John Champion on the call? Who's like, and Richarlison score and remembers where he is and stops. Like the call of it was funny too.
I'm fine. And he was great. I'm fine with players just letting it go. Don't police yourself on the celebrations. I don't care. Just let it go.
But he's been huge. I mean, they lost Son to the Asian Cup, which could have and is a huge blow. And you talk about with Liverpool needing guys to step up. And like, I mean, this guy has just been, he's been a revelation for them since Son has been out. It's been fun to watch. He's killing it right now. So there you go. Let's see, JJ, Luton and Newcastle. This is ridiculous now. We got to start moving through these quicker, I think. Luton and Newcastle, 4-4, insane. Right. Remember, JJ, we played a game with Scott McTominay a couple months back called Is He Good Now? I'm wondering if we're getting closer to wanting to do that with Luton and just change it to Are They Good Now?
I think we can say that they are much improved. I was reading somewhere, I can't remember where, how they're passing. Their completed passes number has just increased. Like it was the start of the season when they were struggling or when, you know, they were trying to get into a rhythm. It was like 150 was as high as they get. Now they're passing in the 300s. I think they've got a really good counterattack. Adebayo, Morris, Chidozie Ogbene.
Yeah. Ross Barkley.
Holy crap.
He's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. He's been great. He's the star man there. Osho popping up with a goal too. This is so much fun. So I was feeding Roisin and I had her in the high chair, and so she's facing me and I've got the TV, so it's perfect. Like, now she's slightly concerned as to what's going on behind me because you can hear the shouting, but like she's eating away. She's a great eater, thank God. And I can just watch the game, and I enjoyed this tremendously. It was great. I will say that How, and maybe he's limited by options, how Eddie Howe will have Dan Byrne at left back against Chidozie Ogbene, the fastest player in the Premier League, and think that's going to be okay. It's unbelievable. It had me think every time I saw Dan Byrne chasing Ogbene, he did once in the first half and then once for the penalty. It had me thinking this every time I saw Dan Byrne out against Ogbene.
What are you doing here?
What are you doing here? Oh, centre backs playing playing in a full back position.
Yeah.
No.
You don't see many 6'7" fullbacks.
There's good reason.
I don't know.
He got absolutely murdered for the penalty. Bennett doesn't have to have that many tricks just to glide past him, and then he's scrambling. I thought it was the correct decision. I know the contact happens before he goes into the box, but then there's further contact when he is in the box. And how about Morris showing such composure? Had to take the penalty twice and then hit it in the same spot. Really, really great. I genuinely thought, I think Luton are better. And also, their manager became something of a TikTok sensation. So Luton put something out on social, not this game, but the game before it, and whatever it was about the interaction or Rob Edwards, whatever he was saying, you know, he is a good looking man, but he went
very,
he's very good looking, isn't he?
That's a hot guy. Let's just call what it is.
Yeah, I'm just looking at pictures now. Just going through pictures. Oh, he got it. There's a picture from the Shropshire Star, Rob Edwards adding to his CV as he plots route to the top. Very, very handsome man.
Sure.
Now I feel bad. But he was, he was all over TikTok. Apparently, some American TikTokers got a hold of him, and they were like, they would die for this man. This is worth mentioning amongst all this. Now the question for me is, I can be attracted to Rob Edwards. Sure, I can be attracted to the style of play. I can love that Ogbene, an Irishman, is doing so well for Luton. How do I get to a place where I can want them to do well and not think of their fans? That's the question. Do we have any Luton fans? We should do a Luton in the Club with a Luton podcast so I can meet a Luton fan that I like and get past the fact that I think they're all kind of Hillsborough chanting Tommy Robinson supporters.
Okay. Interesting. Well, didn't know we were going to take that turn there. Dark. One other note on them, the Swiss Ramble, JJ, posted about Luton Town. Only one club has been promoted with a smaller squad cost than Luton's £12 million in the last 8 years. You want to get? You won't get it.
In the last 12 years?
Yeah.
Smaller.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, good Lord.
I shouldn't say
it's not Bournemouth. Definitely. No, because they had that money, the Russian money. Cardiff?
No.
Go on.
Huddersfield Town.
That's obvious.
They were $11 million in 2016-17, but Swiss Ramble notes that also would have been higher if adjusted for inflation. So, yeah. Before I'm willing to say that they are good now, I do want to point out, if you're a stats guy, I would say the stats are not really too kind to them. Third worst XG, second worst XG differential, second worst shot on target percentage, fourth worst in shot creating actions per 90. So I don't know if this is just like, maybe they've just found it in the last month and everything before that was kind of crap. But I mean, 8 goals in the last 2 games, doing something right, at least in attack. They're conceding. I mean, in this one, at least conceding 4 is not great. Giving a 4-2 lead away in the second half, not great. One quick Newcastle note, only because I try to do this in fairness. Because we were pretty harsh on Kieran Trippier. He had a rough go of it for a while there. This game, however, I know that there was one moment defensively where he probably was up too high and led someone.
Oh, way too high. Yeah. God almighty.
But I thought his assist on the first goal was amazing. What a pass to see. I mean, the vision to like see that develop and thread a needle into space the way that he did. I just thought it was a great ball. And then he scored a huge goal as well to begin Newcastle's comeback. So thought I'd throw that in there. Let's see. Quickly, JJ, Manchester United, promising showing in their 3-0 win over West Ham. United's attack maybe starting to look a little bit more threatening here. Garnacho scoring a couple. He's looked good. Statman Dave posting.
You'd love him.
Turned 21 yesterday. Rasmus Højlund becomes the youngest player ever to score in 4 consecutive Premier League games for Manchester United. What was your 21st birth? Is that a big deal in...
Oh, huge. Okay. People.
What's the drinking age?
I didn't have one.
What do you mean you didn't have? I didn't have one.
I didn't. 21st birthdays are like huge. I had a 30th birthday. I had a great 40th. Ooh, that was fun. Didn't do anything for my 21st. But it is a traditional celebration. Did you see that thing on? You're not on Instagram. Everybody posting pictures. Show us what you were. What you looked like at 21 or. So everyone's posting pictures of themselves at 21. I couldn't find a picture of me at 21. And it seemed as if a friend of mine pointed out to me, that's just people who peaked in their 20s wanting to show you how good they looked. It's got nothing to do with that.
Could be a little bit of that.
Could be.
Maybe, sure. I'll send you mine. My 21st birthday, I was, it's a rough one.
But you're going to show me a picture of you drunk.
I mean, it would be if I sent you one for my 21st birthday. Yeah, that's probably what the picture will be.
Your face caked in puke.
No, I didn't throw up. But yeah.
Anyway, what are we talking about? United. I didn't watch this, and it's probably good for me because I've talked too much about United, and I need a break from them.
Well, you talk too much about them negatively. This would have been an opportunity. Well,
I talked positive. I just talked positive 10 minutes ago about them, about their win over Wolves.
Did you? All you said?
Yeah, I said, what a brilliant finish by Kobbie Mainoo. It was class. What a way to win a game. What do you want from me?
This one, I mean, their attack looked pretty good. It looked pretty good in this. Bruno Fernandes, he can still, like, I know we have moments where sometimes he might go missing more than United fans want from their best player, but boy, he can still pick a pass. Like he just strikes the ball so well. And he did on a few occasions this one. Like I said, Højlund scoring again. It was a good game for them. Harry Maguire, that was probably the most interesting decision. He was put back in the starting 11 over Raphael Varane. A little bit of controversy to that. And I don't know that the decision came off well. Maguire had kind of like an errant back pass that could have gone, Kudus was in pretty much alone, bit of a tough angle, but he just was a terrible finish at the end. And then again later, West Ham's other best chance was Maguire kind of caught out, long ball played right over him. He just couldn't get there, and Jared Bowen was in on goal. And then Diogo Dalot with the defensive play of the game. I mean, he came flying back to make up the ground for Maguire and deflect that shot away from Jared Bowen. It was not just defensive plays of the game, one of the plays of the game. And Dalot, he was brilliant. The decision to go with Maguire, though, 10 different center back partnerships to start games for United this season. This one was Maguire and Lisandro Martinez. That is an awful lot of combinations for a partnership that you'd like to have as much consistency there as possible.
Yeah.
10 different ones, and we're in early February.
No good.
Oof, no, that's not what you want. Also not what you want, JJ, Calvin Phillips. This start that he's gotten at West Ham. I mean, obviously the goal that he conceded in his first game, awful. And then in this one, not as bad. I think the pass that was played to him, it kind of put him in a little bit of a precarious position to begin with, but he gives it away immediately. And off United go the other way. This has not been a good start for a guy who's really, A, trying to get his career back on track, and B, trying to get on the England team for the Euros. Not going well so far.
No, and also a manager in David Moyes that really, really wants you at the club. Like, seriously, there was no director of football made that happen. Moyes really looked for it, and for him not to start, I mean, he started terribly. It's funny, there's a lot of Leeds fans, if you talk to them, they were like when he went to City, nah, he's not that good.
Huh.
Like he fits for what we do and he's been great for us, but he's not that good.
Interesting.
Yeah, that they don't see him as technically good enough on the ball. And I know Leeds supporters who never thought he was going to get a game for City, and were proven right.
They were right. But a good win for United, 3-0. Finally, don't have very much on this, but it is worth pointing out that America's new team, Nottingham Forest, Matt Turner relegated to the bench. So right away, I mean, bang. I guess you saw that coming.
They signed a goalkeeper after we talked.
Matt Sells, yes. And he walked right on into there. Oh, welcome to the club. This is yours now. Matt Turner sent to the bench. Matt Sells now starting for Nottingham Forest. I don't know where this goes for Turner. I don't know if this is, my guess is you won't see him starting again the rest of the season. I don't know what that means for his future, whether
does
at that
end up
club
back in MLS.
I don't know. Point. Maybe. I don't know, but I know it's not, I know it ain't good. So we'll see. And Gio Reyna, who did not start, which I think could also be a trend, but he did come on as a sub, saw a decent amount of the ball in this one. Can't really remember anything notable from him. His passing was fine. I don't know that there was anything so incisive, any, you know, scoring chance necessarily that he created, but he has made his Premier League debut, and it was cool to see. And I sought it out. Like the second I saw he came on, like they've now become appointment viewing. When I saw the thing on Twitter that Reyna was being subbed on, I went right to Peacock and put it on right away because I wanted to see what he did. And I'll probably continue to do that. I'm rooting for the guy. So yeah, there you go, JJ. We'll go ahead. Lot there to
jeez.
Digest. Yeah,
I mean,
know.
That's a podcast in and of itself.
Probably one that's too long, to be honest. And that's only the first half. That's what you get with Caught Offside.
Well, I think we can trim some of the second half, much how we would trim with Manscaped.
So you're going to leave me right in? That's something, JJ, because you know Valentine's Day is knocking, and Manscaped is the remedy for what the love doctor ordered. His prescription, the all-new Performance Package 5.0 Ultra, designed to elevate your grooming game and shine like the heartthrob you are. Join the 10 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with our exclusive offer. Go to manscaped.com, snag 20% off and free shipping with code OFFSIDE. JJ, red may be the official color of Valentine's Day, but you know where you don't want to see red? In the shower, when blood is everywhere because you've decided to use scissors for a pre-Valentine's evening cleanup session. And now the session is ruined, and so is the entire evening as well. So let's talk about the hero of Valentine's Day, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. The electric trimmer features skin-safe technology, thank God, guarding your V-Day treasure against any grooming mishaps. Oh, and it's waterproof as well. So very easy. Do it in the shower.
So important.
Makes cleanup so easy. The package also features the Weed Whacker 2.0 nose hair trimmer, Manscaped's liquid formulations, and two free goodies, the Shed Travel Bag and Boxers 2.0, because comfort is king. And for all the, for everyone with beards out there, Manscaped also brings you the Beard Hedger Pro Kit, designed to shape your scruff effortlessly. It sculpts cheek lines, maintains beard styles, gives you that suave look for your romantic moments. It's got, how many settings? Was it like 20 different settings? That's like crazy. The one I use now is like 1, 2, or 3. This has like, I mean, forget about that. That's so old fashioned. This has got everything.
It's so important. It's just so important because, you know, Valentine's Day, actually Valentine's Day, when you're with someone, it's a bit different because, you know, they know your foibles. They know your, the parts of your beard that are poorly groomed and the parts of your ball sack that aren't in great shape. They know this stuff, but it's important. If you're trying to make an impression on a potential new love, that, you know, you show up to that Valentine's Day date in good order.
Yeah, it is important. Very important. So get on this. Get 20% off and free shipping with code offside at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use code. Wait a minute. Is it offside or caught offside? Now I've forgotten.
Oh, for God's sake. You had one job.
Because your grooming upgrade awaits, ready to charm your Valentine's dates. JJ, we'll go ahead. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back on the other side. Some messy stuff, some Mbappe stuff, more caught offside still to come.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oh, back now. JJ, I think the promo code is caught offside. I don't know what happened to me there.
I don't know.
Sometimes that happens where you just, I don't know, your brain, you just lose one, you lose something. Maybe I hit my head and like that spot is where I kept Manscaped read information.
Sometimes you become aware that you're speaking and then you're like, are the things I'm saying making sense?
Yeah. This is just a collection of random words. I don't even know. Real quick, before we close out here, I do want to mention, because I mentioned my excitement for it a couple weeks ago. I've seen all 3 episodes so far of Masters of the Air. I'm nervous about strongly recommending things because it hurts me when people don't feel the way that I feel.
Dunkirk was a classic example. That
was the moment that changed me.
People telling us it wasn't good.
I don't want to tell you guys out there what you should or shouldn't watch. That's not my job. All I can do is tell you how I feel. I think it's, I'm blown away by it. I think it's spectacular.
Wow.
I think I feel everything watching it. Feel all, every feeling. There's incredible drama, action, sadness, some comedy, light comedy. It's an unbelievable show, and it's only 3 in so far. They release them. The first 2 were released right away, and then it's every Friday. And I think it's just spectacular. The 3rd episode I just watched was just like, holy cow, what a show. So you'll love it. I know you.
I'm into that stuff. I just get hooked. Yeah. I haven't started my Band of Brothers rewatch either yet because I'm kind of, I am engrossed in Top
Watch
Boy.
Watch this for just, there's only 3 out there so far. So you can do it relatively quickly, but okay. I'm just like blown away by it. Let's see. I'll tell you who was not blown away by anything. The people of Hong Kong, as they watched Inter Miami or what was left of them, play against the Hong Kong 11, both Leo Messi and Luis Suarez unavailable for Inter Miami in their exhibition against Hong Kong.
How could this have happened?
As Inter Miami continued this Asian tour, which is now ended, fans, JJ, chanted for a refund during the game. They were booing. Here's some of the audio of what it sounded like. This is I'm sure when Inter Miami and MLS, whenever this was drawn up, they probably didn't envision hearing this at the ends of their games. I mean, that is bad. It was bad to the point the Hong Kong government voiced its disappointment.
You don't want to be hearing from them.
No, no. So the Hong Kong government was mad at Tatler. I don't think anyone was necessarily mad. Well, I don't know. People, I guess, were mad at Inter Miami. Inter Miami, I don't know that they're doing anything other than the fact that they're on this tour, which maybe was ill-advised. They're not, like, Messi and Suarez not playing. They're not doing anything wrong here. Messi has. Ah,
come on, Andrew. They're promising a bit. They're promising something that they know. People aren't there to see, oh, Inter Miami. Who's making Inter Miami?
But who's making the promise? Messi is the most valuable property that this league has ever had, and it's not close. If he's feeling something in his adductor, he can't play. It's an exhibition. He cannot play. Same with Suarez
on
his
tour
knee.
Like this. You're not going on tour as a football club. You're taking Messi on tour. Well, and you're taking Suarez on tour. That is the point of this. So don't do it if you can't guarantee that they'll play.
Which you cannot guarantee.
Which you can't do, so don't do. But it's all about money, making a big splash, promoting Inter Miami, selling shirts, doing all this stuff.
Well, here's the biggest problem. Is I think
this
most,
is a portent of things to come as far as I'm concerned.
Now that I agree with. That is true. But here's the issue though, is I think most people do understand, especially in an exhibition. I think most people do understand that nothing is guaranteed. That these guys, it's like when you're going to a sporting event, it's not like if I'm going to see the Rolling Stones and like Mick Suarez and Messi. If you tell me, oh, Mick Jagger's not performing tonight, and then Suarez, oh, Keith Richards is also not performing tonight, but instead it's going to be like Timmy and Dylan from my neighbor's garage band. Like that's what I mean. People in Hong Kong are not there to see Robert Taylor. They're just not like this is crazy. So, but most people I think do understand when you're going to a sporting event, there's no guarantee of who you're going to see because injuries are such a part of sports. The problem is why I say, I don't know that Miami did anything wrong. Tatler Hong Kong, that's the group, the organizing committee that put this on this game. They tweeted this on January 11th. The organizer Tatler Asia wishes to reassure ticket holders and football fans in Hong Kong that all Inter Miami marquee stars, including Argentina's World Cup winning captain Lionel Messi, will be involved in playing in the Tatler X Fest Hong Kong fixture against the representative Hong Kong team in Hong Kong on February 4th, 2024.
That was
on January 11th.
You can't do that.
You can't do that because a lot can happen in 3 weeks, as was the case here. So, like, that's why I say I don't necessarily know that Inter Miami did anything wrong. If everything was the same and that tweet was never put out there, then I don't know if people are as upset. Now, it didn't help that Tata Martino on Friday gave a press conference where he said Messi was likely to play. If he was just quiet, if he said he was questionable, whatever, we don't know, we're dealing with this issue. But there were things pushing the people of Hong Kong to believe that they were going to see this guy. So I also have no problem with the people of Hong Kong reacting the way that they did.
People of Hong Kong, Andrew is with you.
I'm okay with your reaction because even though sports is fickle and injuries are so ingrained in it, you were kind of led to believe a certain thing. So I do get that frustration. This has not gone well. I don't know. Again, I don't know how they drew this up, what they were envisioning, but you know, they lose 6-0 to Al Nassr. I mean,
Al Nassr that is in the middle of the season, you know,
and a good team, and like Messi's not playing, it's exhibition, like it's not a good look. It's just a bad look when a weird like Saudi Arabia MLS rivalry is sprouted. Like you don't need stuff like this. I don't know. It's a dangerous game that MLS is playing here. When you know this guy is bigger than the league. But they're leaning into that, and it's tough.
How many weeks off had he before he went playing in the World Cup qualifier in Brazil? And he's getting it wasn't me that's saying it. It's observers who watch him all the time are saying it's his worst performance for Argentina in a long time. Getting massaged on the sideline in Rio, not looking comfortable. Then there's more injuries here like this. I worry about this now.
Yeah, I'm a little weird. I think when he's on the field, I think it's going to be brilliant, and I think he'll be awesome. But there's going to be a challenge to keeping him on the field. And if your backup plan is Suarez, I mean, he might be even more of a challenge to keep on the field. A little worried about this. And this is not, I don't know, if you're trying to keep some normalcy, like going on tour, like a week before, 2 weeks before your season starts in Asia, taking this guy who's got an adductor muscle on plane rides all across the globe. Like, I don't know, man. This, I feel like this, again, I'm not, I hope it goes great. I so badly want to see this be awesome. But I do feel like we're watching the first chapter of like the here's where it all went wrong story. This is kind of leading us down a road. The
30 for 30, this is going to be the second part. The first part's the great first season. Also, just Luis Suarez. Like, look at the things Suarez said at Gremio about how much painkillers it takes to get on the field.
Yeah.
Are you going to get on a plane? You're going to go to Hong Kong in your preseason? Yeah. Oh, the greed is real, and it's hampering the football.
And then finally, just wanted to close on this. I know you, I think you lost interest months ago.
Is this Mbappe?
Yeah. Yeah. Mbappe watch. But I still maintain that he's one of the three biggest ticket items on the globe. And when there's news about him, I will report it, because I am a newsman at my core. Over the weekend, JJ, it was reported that he was going to go to Real Madrid, and the reports kind of made it sound like it was done. He'd be foregoing bonuses somewhere around 100 million euros. Well, this morning we got this from Fabrizio Romano. He tweeted, Real Madrid keep advancing on Kylian Mbappe deal with confidence, but nothing has been signed yet. Formal decision on player side expected soon. Nasser Al-Khelaifi and PSG have not received any formal communication yet. It's a crucial step, part of the pact with Kylian. More on Kylian Mbappe. He says, Real Madrid total confidence has also been shared in the dressing room. If he decided to sign for Real Madrid, the salary would have to be significantly lower than in 2022. PSG have already prepared their backup plan in case Mbappe decides to leave. The interesting part there, where Fabrizio Romano says the crucial that no communication with Khelaifi and the club yet, that's a crucial step. It's actually like a pact that they have, that Mbappe would tell them face to face that he's leaving. So until that happens, remains to be seen. He has agreed to forego bonuses. He has agreed that he will tell them face to face. But until those things occur, it's still not done. I mean, the arrow is so clearly pointed in one direction here. I'd be stunned if he's not on Real Madrid. I guess stranger things have happened, but in my head, he's kind of there.
He's there. And you just wonder, though, like, he is definitely leaving in what's perceived to be an inferior league, but he's going to a league now where, like, technically him joining Real Madrid could make them such an uber dominant force.
So I was going to ask you about that, because I know sometimes you're critical of my stance that a lot of good players on a team doesn't matter.
Yeah. But these are different. Like, you're not comparing Camavinga to Mane, Kroos, guys like that, and then having Kylian Mbappe. It's not the same as having Neymar, Messi, together on the same side, and Mbappe. It's not the same. It does feel different. And Bellingham, even as a character, seems markedly different from Neymar. So it doesn't mean it'll definitely work. It doesn't. There can be tensions. There can be friction between star players. Sure, that can all happen, but I don't see it as the same thing. And I wonder now if he is joining La Liga, which is a stronger league than Ligue 1. But I wonder if he's joining at a time when it's in its decline. It's not quite the league it used to be a few years ago. Maybe his signing boosts the league's reputation. I actually think it does.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I would say this is not being celebrated in Barcelona, as they are.
No. Well, I mean,
they can barely sign like
another nail in the coffin for them. Jesus, like the Barcelona are shopping at the once upon a time store. They have Lewandowski, he's not the Lewandowski he used to be. That's the star player that they're signing, the marquee player they've signed in the last few years. And here's Real Madrid signing Bellingham and then getting Kylian Mbappe. Come on.
This, yeah. I don't know. I hope it doesn't turn into a one club league. Our hope might be with Girona to prevent that from happening.
I mean, there's every chance that's exactly the way it's going.
big draw of the Real Madrid not winning over the weekend, though. Huge point for Atletico Madrid. Marcus Llorente scoring in stoppage time. 1-1 was the final there. So Real Madrid still top of the table by just 2 points, though. So Girona still within touching distance. But yeah, if you get Mbappe with Vinicius and Rodrigo and, like, I mean, Bellingham, what?
Yeah.
This is...
But then again, then the same thing happens again. Well, hey, you're at a club, you're expected to win La Liga. Until he does it in the Champions League, we're back again at the same kind of dichotomy, like go and win in the Champions League. That's where the pressure would be.
How could they not? Oof. It could be some fun Real Madrid Manchester City matchups in our future. I hope everyone gets used to that, because it feels like we're going to be talking about that for many years to come. But like JJ says, you never know. You can't just put a bunch of superstars on a team and think they're going to win. And that is proven true at times, but I will continue to put my money on those teams and I'll be right more often than I'm wrong. JJ, I enjoyed this immensely. This was a bear of a podcast.
Oh, it was a beast. What about the Garys? Think of the Garys.
It's all over for the Garys. You can think about that on your long, soulful walk. You can think about Liverpool and you can think about all the Garys out there and how that G-A-R-Y are four letters that we're just never going to see next to each other again. Sad. That's sad. Maybe you'll live tweet the walk. We want to know where you are, what you're feeling.
Yeah, do you know what? I could do that. I'll do a live tweet tonight when I go on the walk.
Yeah, just like periodic updates of how you're feeling at different spots as you've postponed your feelings from yesterday.
That's a great idea. All right, I'm going to live tweet the walk then tonight.
Nice.
Awesome.
Nice. I enjoyed this and I look forward to that. JJ, to you, I say...
Check you later, fun boy.
I'll see ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.